On the 23rd day of October, Halloween gave to me 23 Cushing's ghouling, 22 Rutgers glaring, 21 babies killing, 20 horsehead snorting, 19 D's renting, 18 Franks perving, 17 angels stripping, 16 demons jazzercising, 15 runes on parchment, 14 Josephs whispering, 13 seniors bleeding, 12 creepy masks, 11 dancing demons, 10 Catholic monsters, 9 priests a-miracling, 8 Jerry's vamping, 7 Jody's oinking, 6 body swapping, 5 reeds a-wolfing, 4 drunken uncles, 3 werewolf colonies, 2 spooky sisters, and a psycho who killed Janet Lee. Well, hey there, everyone, and welcome to the 23rd film in our 31 Days of Halloween. It is, of course, October 23rd. Happy Saturday to ya. Hope you're having a great weekend. I know I am. I will be doing haunted houses tonight, so I'm very excited. This continues that sort of home stretch of movies that I mentioned before, where a lot of these are movies I haven't seen in a while, or movies I really like a lot, or movies that are, I have heard, classics that I need to see. We're getting to that soon. And this is sort of a comfort food movie for me in a lot of ways. Of course, this is 1972's Tales from the Crypt, which ostensibly is based on the William Gaines EC comics like Tales from the Crypt and Vault of Horror and that kind of thing. Although it bears only a passing resemblance. I mean, the stories are there for sure, but the Crypt Keeper is a little formal, I suppose, compared to what you would expect from Tales from the Crypt, especially with like the HBO series Crypt Keeper and so forth. The Crypt Keeper in this film is played by Sir Ralph Richardson, I think is his name. And he is very, like, this cloaked figure that is delivering these lines very seriously. You have come to this place. Anyway, so these five knuckleheads find their way into a crypt. They don't know how they got there necessarily, and they are now trapped in a room with a becloaked Sir Ralph Richardson, who is telling them stories or showing them visions of their lives. And it's a little bit of a cheat, even though if you've ever seen horror movies before, you kind of know what's going on here. But he says, "This is a warning." And he shows them each a story. The people involved are Joan Collins and Martin Boddy, Ian Hendry. Who else is involved with this? Robin Phillips is part of this. At any rate, number of great British actors. One notably, there's a guy named Patrick McGee who shows up in the last story that you'll probably know if you've ever seen A Clockwork Orange, because he was the guy who, Alex and his droogies break into his house and kill his wife and so forth. And it's always weird for me to see him in anything that isn't A Clockwork Orange, even though he's a very storied actor with a great career. That's just the character I most associate with him, which is also one of the most horrifying things in the history of cinema. So, at any rate, it is directed by Freddie Francis, who directed a number of great British horror films, directed The Vault of Horror, I believe, not long after this, did a movie called The Vampire Happening, which I really enjoy. I think that's a terrific movie, but did a number of other movies as well. Did Son of Dracula, did Trog, directed Trog, did The Deadly Bees and The Psychopath and They Came From Beyond Space, Tales That Witness Madness. So I was wrong, he didn't do Vault of Horror. But the guy who wrote this, Milton Subotsky, who has a great name, by the way. If you can get yourself a name like Milton Subotsky, do it. But Milton Subotsky wrote this and also wrote Vault of Horror, is why I was mixing that up. And he also was kind of a storied screenwriter and, you know, British horror and genre movies in particular. Wrote the Doctor Who movies with Peter Cushing, wrote Dr. Terror's House of Horrors, wrote The Skull, I, Monster, which is a great title, wrote At the Earth's Core. So yeah, it comes from a pretty good pedigree. Like, neither of these dudes were first-timers when they got around to Tales from the Crypt. It is directed very straightforward. There's not a whole lot of flash when it comes to either the writing or the direction of this. But they're pretty good stories for the most part, and we'll talk about each of them a little bit. The first story involves Joan Collins, and Joan Collins is the All Through the House story, and that's been adapted a couple of times at this point, where she kills her husband and then hears on the radio, hey, there's a psychopath on the loose wearing a Santa Claus costume. And it's sort of her being terrorized by this guy a little bit. But it's played pretty straight, and so it's not very tense, I would argue. And it, you know, it's, I think, the flattest of the stories because it's just so straightforward. There's not a whole lot to it. But, you know, Joan Collins is fine in it, and it's good. It's a good setup, and there's one pretty good jump scare in it. So, all things being equal, not the best, but it's fine. Then you have a story called Reflection of Death, in which this guy, Ian Hendry, plays a guy named Carl Maitland, who like leaves his house, and you can tell that he is about to leave his family on account of when he says goodbye to his daughter for the night. She's like, good night, daddy. And he's like, goodbye, child. Like, he is about to fuck off well and good and not have any part of this family anymore. So he goes to pick up his girlfriend, Susan. And he's like, you know, I gotta say, I just never saw this coming. But you know how it is. You fall in love and your entire life changes. And kind of fuck my wife and family, right? So let's get out of here. And then he has a vision that they go off the road and getting a car crash because of a car coming at him in the wrong lane. And Susan's driving, and, you know, let's all blame the woman driver for this one. At any rate, so after he comes to and goes searching for Susan and his wife and family, they're horrified by him. He like runs into a bum who freaks out and screams when he shows up. When he gets to Susan's house, it turns out that she is now blind because of this car accident, and he has been dead for 2 years and has come back as a corpse for some reason. So he finally sees his reflection, hence the title Reflection of Death, and yeah, and that's kind of it. Then we get into the good stuff. Those two are okay, but now the back three are where things get real. So the next one up is Poetic Justice, which may be my favorite of the bunch, in which there's this shitty rich kid named Robin Phillips, who, or that's the actor's name, James is the name in the story. But he and his father have this big, nice house. It's a very wealthy neighborhood. But there is one holdout where there's an older house owned by a guy named Krimsdyke, who is played by Peter Cushing. And so this shitty kid, James, decides that he wants to get Krimsdyke out of the neighborhood because he's tired of looking at this eyesore of a house. And he just hates poor people in general, I think. And so he goes on this campaign to get rid of Peter Cushing. And Peter Cushing is just this nice old man. His wife has died. So he's a junk man. His job is like working with the city garbage collection or whatever. And he takes toys that he finds in the trash, fixes them, and gives them to the local children of the neighborhood. He couldn't be a nicer person. His biggest flaw is that he's got a bunch of dogs that bark all the time in a little pen, and that's a little bit of a problem, but whatever. And so the shitty kid James calls the authorities on these dogs and says that, hey, they're unlicensed, they don't have papers or anything, they bark all the time, and yada yada yada, and kind of sets it up so it looks like the dogs have dug up the neighbor's roses, and that kind of initiates the complaint. And so all of Peter Cushing's dogs are taken away from him, which is a blow, but he's still, you know, hanging in there. And then they start talking about how it's creepy. James and his father tell the neighbors, like, hey, isn't it kind of weird that all the kids go to his house? And what are his motives, after all? And doesn't that seem a little untoward? And they're like, yeah, I guess it does seem a little weird. And so they end up having to, you know, tell their kids, all these parents in the neighborhood are telling the kids, hey, we don't want you hanging out with this Krimstock guy anymore. And so his dogs are gone. And now all of a sudden the kids who he sort of lived for, love to repair toys and give toys to and all that, they stop coming around. And then insult to injury, come Valentine's Day, this shitty kid James has written a bunch of poison pen pal letters in the shape of Valentine's cards to Peter Cushing. And they're all, you know, terrible cards, like, hey, you know, roses are red, violets are blue, we wish, you know, disease would go away just like you, shit like that. That's not one of them, but you get it. The idea is that it's just a bunch of poems, hence the title Poetic Justice, a bunch of poems where they're telling Peter Cushing that he should die. And what no one knows about Peter Cushing, though, is that he has this like spiritual beyond the grave connection with his wife, who is warning him of danger, but he doesn't totally heed it. And the next thing you know, Peter Cushing has hung himself because of all these letters and, you know, the fact that the kids are shunning him now. He gets fired from his job. James gets him fired from his job. It's just the shittiest. Like, this kid James is the worst. And so, a year to the day of Valentine's Day, in which Peter Cushing took his own life, he rises from the grave and goes to the shitty kid James and murders him. And the father finds him the next day with a poem, and it's something like, you know, you're a terrible person, you were bad from the start, but that doesn't matter because you have no, and then you unroll the paper and his heart is there, like literally still beating in the paper, which I don't think is medically how that works, but who cares? It's awesome. That story is so good. Peter Cushing is such a sweet old man, and the makeup work when he rises from the grave is really good too. It's a really great corpsey look. You've probably seen that picture floating around, even if you've never seen 1972's Tales from the Crypt. You've probably seen that image of the dead and corpsified Peter Cushing. It's so good. Oh, I love this one so much. So Poetic Justice, total banger. Great one. Then we get a story called Wish You Were Here, which is obviously a monkey's paw story. And in fact, the characters talk about the monkey's paw in the story. So what it is this couple who are in dire straits financially. You know, they're losing the business and to the bank and potentially their home and so forth. And the husband and wife, the wife in particular, notices, hey, you know this old statue that you got forever ago? There's some writing at the bottom of it that says that it grants 3 wishes, but to be careful on account of how wishes can backfire. And the guy's like, yeah, maybe we shouldn't screw with that. Like, we got enough problems to deal with. Besides, have you ever seen that story, The Monkey's Paw? Like, things just don't work out when you start wishing on objects. And she's like, no, I got this. I wish that we had lots and lots of money. That's all. That's all I'm going to wish for. It's cool. And he's like, all right, we'll see how this goes. Oh, I got a call from our lawyer. I need to go talk to him about all this financial trouble we're having. So he takes off for the lawyer's, sees this dude behind him on a motorcycle in a skull helmet, which is not what you expect to see. And anyway, ends up dying in a car accident. Well, we think he died in a car accident, but so he dies and leaves a bunch of money to the wife. And the attorney who is informing her, like, hey, you're a rich woman now, she's like, oh my god, I wished on this statue and then my husband died and left me all this money. Oh, I should have listened to him. I'm going to wish for him to come back. And the lawyer's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I read The Monkey's Paw 2, and fucked up stuff happens when you do that. I would recommend that you do not, in fact, wish for your husband to come back. And she's like, no, 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 I got this. I'm gonna get it right. And so she wishes for her husband to come back. And so all of a sudden, a bunch of people just bring his coffin in. And she's like, oh, not like that. Oh, I fucked up. Okay, all right, so I'm going to get this right. I wish my husband would come back and be like he was right before the accident and stay that way forever. All of a sudden, there's banging from inside the coffin. And they open it up, and it turns out that her husband didn't die in the car accident. He had a heart attack right before the car accident. And so he comes back, but he is in a perpetual state of pain because he is now a living organism that can't die. And his blood has been filled with formaldehyde. And he wakes up just screaming and like, please, you gotta stop this. And she tries to kill him by hacking him up, but because she wished that he would stay alive forever, he doesn't die. He just is alive in pieces now. And it's a real something, man. There's a shot of his intestines that is pretty shocking for the time. Although the images of the lopped off hands, maybe not quite so good. But it, again, banger of a story, and it's not super long. It gets to the point. And the ending of it is horrifying. It is so good. And so we get to our final story, which is called Blind Alleys, which is about another real asshole named Major Rogers, who goes to run a home for the blind. One of the residents there being that guy Patrick McGee from Clockwork Orange. And he's just a real hard-ass former military guy who cuts down on the heat at night and doesn't feed the residents very well because he's trying to scrimp and save and make the place profitable or something. And basically pushes all of the residents to hate him. And in fact, they go to him at one point because they're like, hey, man, we got this sick friend of ours because, you know, it's cold all the time at night and you're not feeding us very well. And so he's very sick. And Major Rogers, along with his dog Shane, who is his constant companion, goes to check on this dude. And he's like, oh, don't worry about it. He's dead now. That problem has solved itself. And so all these blind folks, what live at this residence, end up luring the dog away from Captain Rogers or Major Rogers and lock the dog away. Then they lock Major Rogers in another room where he can hear the dog barking, and he's like, please feed my dog. And they're like, in time, Major Rogers, in time. And so he can hear them building shit. And that goes on for a little bit while he's like begging for food and water and begging for them to take care of his dog. And, you know, he's a real shit, so kind of who cares? I mean, the dog is that's an unfortunate collateral damage here, but whatever happens to Major Rogers, as the audience, we are like, oh yeah, whatever he gets is not going to be bad enough. But it's still pretty good, because what they do is they build essentially a pen where they finally, after 2 or 3 days, they open the door to this pen and or to the room that they've kept him in. And it's this hallway that they've designed that he can't get out of, so he has to sort of follow this pathway that they've built. Along one side of the pathway, as you turn a corner, is a stretch of the hallway that is nothing but razor blades lodged into the wall. And so he has to kind of turn sideways and weave his way through that, and he cuts his hand a couple of times and cuts his face and stuff like that, but gets through it, and then gets to another bend that leads to another door. And this is where, you know, Carter, the Patrick McGee guy, he pulls that door open, and it's Shane, the Major's German Shepherd, who hasn't eaten for 3 days, suddenly face to face with a bleeding man. And Shane runs after him, and then the guy realizes, like, oh, I either let this dog eat me or I run willy-nilly through this hallway of razor blades. And it kind of ends there, but it's a real Saw trap kind of thing, and it rocks. And then the end of it is the Crypt Keeper being like, well, it wasn't really a warning. I'm just telling you what happened that got you here in hell. And it has a real, like, I'm going to turn to the camera and accuse the audience of being evil people as well. Like, everyone has a story. Who's next? Maybe you? And looks at the screen and whatnot. But anyway, all that hamminess aside, and Ralph Richardson, you know, delivers it with austerity and whatnot. But, you know, all anthologies are kind of the sum of their parts. And I like that Tales from the Crypt, it has a couple that aren't great, but they're not terrible. And those are also fairly short. And then you get into those back three, all of which are really, really good. And it you know, like, it sticks the landing. That Peter Cushing Poetic Justice one is so good. I just love this movie. It's one of those that I can kind of throw on anytime, have it rolling in the background. You know, stop and, oh, well, this is the part where Peter Cushing comes out of the grave. Or, you know, this is the part where that guy is going to wake up in a coffin screaming horribly. It's, yeah, all of that stuff is great. It's a terrific Halloween movie because you can kind of, you know, take your bites. And, like, if you're getting your jack-o'-lanterns together, it's about that time when jack-o'-lanterns ought to be made. You can sit down with the newspaper and your pumpkins and turn on 72's Tales from the Crypt. Have a wonderful time. It's, you know, not necessarily for kids, because even though it was made in 1972 and there's nothing especially graphic about it, I mean, those the guts that you see in the Monkey's Paw episode are pretty gory, but it's just kind of dark and mean. I wish that the Crypt Keeper were a little more fun in this, but that's kind of my only complaint. Everything else about it, I really dig. So, yeah, you absolutely ought to check that out. If you've never seen 72's Tales from the Crypt, do. It's really good for the Peter Cushing story alone, but the other two at the end are really good as well. So, or maybe you disagree, and if you do, then you can drop me a line over at Legion Podcasts on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram and tell me if you agree or disagree or whatever. But that's gonna do it for today. Good Lord, I've given you pearls here, people. Tales from the Crypt, great movie. You ought to see it. Is it as good as The Hitcher? Who's to say? Totally different movies, but they're both terrific, so enjoy them both. We've got more of this run coming this is the end of the 31 days. Is just movies that I think are great and that ought to be watched this time of year. So more of that is on the way. And thanks for listening to this. Have yourself a great rest of the Saturday. Do good work out there, or just get some relaxing in, whatever you do on your Saturdays. And stay spooky, because we've only got one more weekend left to do so. And I'll see you right back here tomorrow for another in the 31 Days of Halloween. Talk to you then.